Good evening, everybody, and welcome, and thank you for being here. I'll start off with introductions. My name is Bill Hall. I am the chair of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. This is Wayne Belmont, our county legal counsel. And this is an informational listening session and discussion about the proposed county licensing program for vacation rentals outside of the incorporated cities. I think as most everyone here probably knows, Lincoln City, Newport, Yahuts especially, have had VRD licensing programs for years, but the county never has. Actually, it was a topic of discussion roughly 20 years ago, mid-1990s. I was a reporter covering county government at the time. I wasn't a commissioner yet. Mr. Belmont was in his job, but he and I have discussed this, and I think his memory, he confirms my memory. You know, at that time, Rhodes End was not yet annexed into Lincoln City. And of course, Rhodes End has a lot of VRDs. And the Rhodes End Improvement Association approached the Board of Commissioners essentially to petition them to try to legislate VRDs out of existence. Well, legally, that's not even possible. There was some back and forth discussion, and the Board of Commissioners at the time, kind of ironically, now that we're at this point, I think proposed a licensing program, at least in concept, that would have been very similar to what we're talking about right now. But since there wasn't a meeting of the minds at that time, the subject was dropped, and it never really resurfaced for probably until about 2 years ago. And that was when I started especially hearing from some of you folks, a lot of other folks in Glenedon Beach and Lincoln Beach. You know, we've had scattered complaints from other parts of the county related to vacation rentals, a few from Bayshore, but really I think the concentration of development in Glenedon Beach and Lincoln Beach, because you're, I think, probably the last large residential area outside of a city that has sewers, that allows a greater overall concentration of development, and that has allowed the construction of some of these very large mega home rentals. And, the complaints we're hearing are very much the same as what we were hearing from Rhodes End 20 years ago. Noise, parking, trash. Those were the reasons. So that's where we started working, and we appreciate everybody's patience in trying to come up with what would be, we hope, a reasonable licensing program. And that program has two basic goals: to address those quality of life issues that I already talked about, and then also to help make sure that we're collecting the county transient room tax on all properties. I've heard from motel owners essentially saying, please address this. We want a level playing field. And I think at least one of you has called to my attention a VRD that was advertising on the web that they were able to charge less because they didn't collect the room tax. So that's a secondary issue, but really the quality of life issue is the most important. I think, we want to acknowledge that tourism is one of the major businesses, one of the major economic pillars of the community, and that this helps the tourism community thrive. But at the same time, we also want to be cognizant of the fact that there are significant quality of life issues on neighborhoods. So, before we even get started, I want to address three questions that have come to me about the how and the why. In one of our earlier community meetings, somebody asked, well, don't we already have ordinances to deal with these things? Ordinances addressing, parking, littering, a noise ordinance. And yes, we have all of those things, but our ability to hold people accountable is kind of limited. I don't know why I keep picking on Idaho, but it seems convenient. Say the guy from Idaho who comes over here, parties, you know, gets cited by the sheriff's office for loud noise at 2 a.m., yes, we'll cite him. But if he never returns to Lincoln County, that's of limited value. Mm-hmm. So then another question that came to me when I was explaining this to a VRD owner, and he says, oh, well, you're just going to let the renters off the hook? No, not at all. They'll still be held accountable. If a sheriff comes at 2 a.m. and cites that guy from Idaho, he will be cited. He will have that citation. But also, this is a way to hold owners accountable. And again, it's, if those of you who have read the ordinance, it's a gradually escalating enforcement mechanism going up through several steps before we get to the very worst case scenario, revoking the license to rent. But hopefully, you know, we really believe that most owners do want to be responsible and frankly do want to protect their investment, and we'll make sure that it doesn't come to that point. You know, another person asked me, well, why are we demonizing VRD owners? And we're not. Again, we're just asking people to be accountable and to do what they need to do to protect neighborhood quality of life interests. At this point, I would like to hand off to Mr. Belmont to walk through the details of the proposal in a little more detail, and then we'll open it up for your questions and comments.
And I think that's important. We are here. This is part of our listening tour, really. We're here to hear from you. You know, you've had an opportunity now to take a look at the draft ordinance, to see what we're proposing, and you can give us some suggestions of what you see, what you like, what you don't like, that we can take back to the whole board and try and tweak this if we need to.
Could I jump back in? One thing I forgot, and I should say, again, people are asking about next steps. We've got this session tonight, another one in Walport on Thursday night, another one in Newport at the end of the month. Then this will be back before the Board of Commissioners at our first meeting in May. Mr. Belmont and I will report back the feedback to the full board, and at that point we'll decide the next steps, whether to move forward with adoption as written, whether to make some changes, or something else. So,
and even though I look across the audience, and I know a number of you have already heard me talk about the particulars of the ordinance, I am going to repeat it since we are taping this, and you can share that then with others if you would like, or others can listen to this on the county website. Both the proposal, the description of the proposal, and the draft ordinance are available at the Lincoln County website. That's at www.co.lincoln.or.us. Go on there and click through, and you'll find that information available to you. As Chair Hall indicated, this is a business licensing program. That's what we're proposing here. It differs from what's being done in Lincoln City, from what's being done in Newport. But we feel that it really addresses the key issues that we've seen here. And I think describing the purpose of the ordinance, which is what we include in the whereas clauses, I think is important for us to describe what we're trying to accomplish here. We're establishing operating standards for the rental of short-term dwelling units through creation of this business licensing program that allows the operation of such rentals in a manner that respects and protects the livability of neighborhoods in which these rentals are located. I think that's important. That's the key for what we're trying to accomplish here. The remainder of this is what we're looking at to try and implement those particular purposes. This would apply to all dwelling units which are rented for up to 30 days. This is short-term rentals. We define a number of terms in the code, in the ordinance, that are necessary for us to implement this program. We established the Lincoln County Licensing Authority. And that's what's created to administer the program for the county and to enforce the licensing requirements. One of the key features of this particular ordinance is that we're going to actually have people who eat, sleep, and drink this particular activity. We're going to have staffers that will be available to both procure the licenses for the VRDs that exist out there, and then if there are issues with the operators of these particular dwellings, then we can enforce the elements of the code through people who have experience in dealing with enforcement activities. The program will be administered in Lincoln County through the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office in cooperation with the Lincoln County Treasurer's Office. The Sheriff's Office was chosen for a couple of reasons. Number one is they actually get to deal with a lot of these complaints already. When a noise complaint is made, when there's a party that's out of control, when there's minors drinking, those kinds of things, they're having to respond to these things in the first place. So they're already out there trying to deal with a lot of these particular issues. They enforce our noise ordinance. They are actually charged with doing that.
And that's the Lincoln County?
Noise ordinance, Lincoln County Sheriff's Department.
So that's who you would call if you had a complaint?
Yes, we're actually going to have a person working within the Sheriff's Office who is going to be the administrator of this program and also be the enforcement side of this thing. They also are very, very experienced at doing licensing programs. They already do a number of licenses and permits that the county issues, and including concealed handgun licenses. They do the alarm permits that we do, that a number of other programs in which they are involved. So they have a lot of experience with doing a licensing program. So the key to making this work is to establish these operating standards, what we're calling operating standards. And that includes elements of, number one, owners of the VRDs are going to have to identify a contact person. You as, for instance, a neighbor or you as an owner are going to have somebody that people can contact when there are issues around the operation of the VRD. One of the questions that we're posing to all the groups that we're going to meet with, and one of the things that we heard from you when we presented this to the Board of Commissioners, is the question of whether that contact person should be a local person. And we want to hear from you tonight more about that. If you didn't have a chance to tell us last week when this went to the Board of Commissioners, let us know tonight. I think that's an important consideration for us. I will tell you that what we heard last week, and just looking around and checking a couple of other ordinances, is having the contact person be local is extremely important. So if you're an owner that lives in the Valley or lives in Portland, it's pretty hard for you to respond sometimes if you're getting a call for a complaint if you don't have that kind of local nexus and connection.
Can I jump in on that?
Sure.
Yeah, I think that message was really heard loud and clear at that last meeting. And again, it could be a rental management company, but doesn't necessarily have to be. As long as there is somebody, somebody suggested, like there's security companies that if some, we talked about our mythical VRD owner in Corvallis with a rental over here, if they wanted to contract with a local security company to respond to complaints, as far as, at least what I think we're in the direction we're heading, that would be acceptable as well as a local management company.
And it's not that you just have to designate that contact person. You also have to get that information out there, get it out to residents in the vicinity of where the VRD is located, as well as provide it to the local fire department and the local sheriff's office. We're requiring that they post a sign on the VRD that also has the contact information. So if you don't remember it, you lose the number, that it's going to be posted out there. If there's problems there, there'll be a phone number there to call if you've got a problem. The information also has to be kept current. If that changes, if your local contact changes, you need to notify the same people that that's changed, including the fire department and the sheriff's office, and change that sign so people know who it is. It's also that if there are complaints made, we're putting a requirement on the owner of the VRD or the contact person, if that's the person they're utilizing here, to contact the renter of the dwelling within a reasonable period of time to resolve that complaint. So there's a requirement on the owners that they react when they hear issues coming up here and try to resolve those particular issues.
So they don't actually have to come out to the site when there's these problems?
No.
What's a reasonable period?
A reasonable period of time, as I've had that question asked, and a reasonable period of time is going to be determined by us, by the county. And it's not unusual to have standards. We have a number of standards in our codes that put a reasonable standard, what an ordinary person would do in a reasonable time. And it might depend on the circumstances.
Yeah.
And so we're going to look at those, and we're going to make some determinations on that, whether they've responded in a reasonable manner. Calling, a noise complaint and you respond, the contact person contacts them 48 hours later, it's not going to be a reasonable period of time. All right?
Okay. Let me just make my comments then now about that particular provision. In your draft ordinance, what it says is the owner or contact person shall attempt to contact. Actually, there's a few typos in here, too. It says contract instead of contact. And I think you meant to put the number 20 minutes in that particular section instead of 2 minutes. In any case, my suggestion is that since it's our intention, from what you just said, that the contact actually be made, to just delete the attempt to. Those two words, attempt to, so that that section, and it's section 4.440 operating standards, subsection
D.
1D, subsection 1D. It just says, shall contact a renter by phone or in person within 20 minutes of receiving a complaint. Because I think that's probably what you intended. You just excerpted this language from the Telemark ordinance. That's what they say.
Yeah.
But I think what we really want, I think everybody here wants, is that actual contact.
Okay.
So that would be my suggestion. I apologize for interrupting.
That's okay. And maybe what we should do is say, let me go through and do the presentation first. That's probably a good idea. And then there'll be an opportunity for people to give us the contact or the information they want to do. But let me get through this part first. So the things that we're trying to address, the other issues in the operating standards are, there's four key ones, and I'm going to hit each one of those. First one is quiet time. And that actually requires that they comply with the county NORS ordinance requirements for quiet hours between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. And we'll enforce that through the county noise ordinance. But, of course, if we receive complaints, as Commissioner Hall indicated, we're going to respond to the complaint for the noise. But if they continue to have those kinds of problems, that becomes an issue in a later determination of whether or not we need to revoke or deny a license in the future. Garbage service. This is a key element here. The owner is required to provide and maintain adequate garbage service with required secured containers. Now, one of the things we heard at the last meeting, one of the things we'd like to hear a little bit more is that we had left it open so that they could provide an alternative for garbage service. They didn't necessarily have to use one of the franchise hauls. One of the nice things we have in Lincoln County is we have the ability, there are franchised services that are available in every part of the county. In fact, the reason we franchise is we require those particular companies to actually provide service within designated areas, even if it's not necessarily financially feasible for them to do so. In order to get the franchise, they have to provide services in the entire area. So there is garbage service available to every corner of Lincoln County. And one of the things we heard last time is maybe to do away with the alternative and simply to say straightforward, you're required to have franchised services. One of the other things we wanted to explore a little bit that we heard from you is the issue of whether or not, so in some of these cases, the containers, they are maybe receiving franchise services, but you have your garbage service, you have your recycling service, and now in some areas you have composting, curbside composting. But they're leaving the containers out on the street 24/7, 365. And we want to hear some more from people about that. Is that an issue that people are saying? Because at least one of the service providers out here has what they call a concierge service. And that is that they will actually go curb to street. They'll go to your backyard or to your side fence. They'll pull that container, come and empty it, and turn it back. Now, you pay a premium price for that particular service, but that is available. That's something else we might want to explore. So if we'd like to hear from folks if that's an issue, it's not just the garbage that's on the street, there are not any garbage service out there, but is it also the service that is being provided out there? And we can look at some potential options for addressing that. The third element is parking. And we're requiring the person, when they apply for a license, to provide a plan showing parking spaces for each sleeping area plus one more per dwelling unit. And we're providing that for any of these properties that are developed after the ordinance is in place. They're going to have to provide that off-street. And for existing dwellings, we're asking them to identify where the parking would be. We want to know what their parking plan is to meet these requirements. And the parking has to be physically and legally available. So we're looking at, this is probably going to be one of the key issues. It's one of the ones that I know that we've heard from you before, is how do we handle the parking issue? And this is probably going to be a work in progress. I think there's some additional work that we need to do to address this particular issue. But this is, I think, a good start for identifying how they're proposing to meet parking requirements there. If there are violations, if people are parking in prohibited areas, and we could show that, and that could lead to additional enforcement action against the VRD owner. And finally, the last issue is, I think, a big one, at least what we're hearing, especially in North County, the Glen Eagan Beach area, and that's limits on occupancy.
Is what?
Limits on occupancy.
Oh, okay.
And what we're doing is throwing in a limitation on occupancy of 3 persons per sleeping area plus an additional 2 with a maximum to not exceed 16 persons. This may be one of the more controversial ones with VRD owners. I think that's if we're going to get pushback from VRD owners, it may be with that particular issue, but we're going to put it in play. That's what we're proposing.
And so that's compliant with the building code, am I correct?
There is a building code provision that talks about lounging houses, but people, that I'm not sure that that's the people are going to argue that that's not, they're not operating a lodging house.
Right.
You know, so there's all kinds of legal arguments that I think could come up around this. And we're going to simply make it a requirement for the license. You have to adhere to that particular requirement. One of the things I should note in here is this program here is not, and I want to make that eminently clear, is not intended to be a land use ordinance or implementing ordinance. We're not going to get into that realm. I think that's caused some problems with other jurisdictions when they leak over into the land use arena for doing these things. This is a licensing program and intended that way. I feel that that gives us some stronger enforcement mechanisms and ability to regulate this activity better than if we fall into the trap of going into the land use arena. So just to make that clear, it's not a land use ordinance. So the process when if someone violates these particular operating standards, it's got a tiered process. We're starting with an informal process first, initially, in which the basically the complainants can call the contact person and request resolution. I mean, it's the first thing is neighbor to neighbor. Take care of this problem. And we hope that that'll take care of a variety of programs. And again, I think as Commissioner Hall indicated, I think a large number of the VRD owners here want to be good neighbors. They do not want to have problems with their neighbors. So they would like to hear from people about this. It's not the case with all of them, but I think a large number of them do want to do that. So we think this informal resolution process will lead to avoiding a lot of conflicts by just simply having the contact information, know who to contact, and that will take care of the problem. And again, as we indicated, we're talking about making reasonable efforts to remedy the situation. If that doesn't work, though, we do have a more formal process in which the party can make a complaint to Lincoln County, the licensing authority. This is where the sheriff's office will come into play, give us information related to what the complaint is, and then we'll make an attempt to try and resolve the problem and see if we can take care of the issue. If that doesn't work, then we'll issue a determination of whether or not there actually has been a violation of the licensing standards. And we can undertake enforcement authority if we need to. We have tools within our county code and Lincoln County Code Chapter 10 that we can undertake, especially if there's egregious violations that are occurring out. We do provide an appeals process. If either party doesn't like the determination we make, either the complaining party or the VRD owner, to appeal that particular determination. And this process is really separate from but complementary to the procedures we have for revoking or canceling a license or denying renewal of a license. And again, as I indicated, we have some other enforcement tools that we can undertake in the county code. And by having this program under the sheriff's office, we want to have personnel that actually can undertake those things. And so in addition to those informal and the more formal process there, we've provided a provision that says that we can revoke or not renew a license. This will be an annual license. People have to do this annually. What we've proposed at this point is if there's 3 or more violation determinations in the formal process that we've outlined in the code within 1 year. I think we heard some concerns last time that may be too lenient. that there may be some issues of you know, we see three determinations made in a year. Is that time frame too short? And we want to listen to that if people have concerns with that. I think that this will work for us, and that we'd like to give it a try with this provision in place. We also are looking at not only is there a violation of these code provisions, is there a violation of other code provisions, would be one of the basis on which we could revoke. And we're tying it back into these people will be required to comply with our transient room tax provision. So they need to pay that room tax. And failure to collect and remit the room tax is also considered a violation. If we decide that there's the appropriate violations and we want to either revoke a license while it's in place or deny a license at the renewal time, we'll hold a hearing on that particular matter. And the key to enforcement really right here is you have to have a valid license in order to operate the VRD. So if it's either revoked or denied or you fail to get one in the first place, that gives us grounds to go and maintain an action in circuit court, which we think will be as effective as anything in making sure that the terms aren't met. As I indicated, we're still working with, we're working with the Sheriff's Office and the Treasurer's Office to get all the administrative tools in place to get our applications developed, to get the necessary programs, the enforcement programs. We're going to develop a couple of software programs to track this. And if you think about who does investigations better than anybody, the Sheriff's Office is actually going to be able to have the tools and the resources to go out and determine if people don't voluntarily come in and get a VRD. They're going to have some mechanisms to go out there and find those that are doing short-term rentals and ensure that they do comply with these requirements, get a valid license, and comply with the requirements. And then, of course, we're going to establish some fees related to this particular process in order to offset the costs we have with both the administration and enforcement. So that's the outline of the program. And I think now's the time to take questions and comments from you guys as to what elements you like, what elements you'd like to see different. Any other comments you might have?
Well, I didn't do my homework because I was under the weather.
Okay.
But I would like to know, I just grabbed some stuff out of my box. What does the heading of whatever you handed out last time say? Was there a handout?
Can you repeat the question?
She wanted to know what materials are available. There's two items that are available, and you can get them on the website right now. One is it's the proposal called Vacation Rental Dwelling / Business License.
Okay.
That kind of outlines the program. And then there is a draft ordinance, and it's in an ordinance format. Mm-hmm.
Sir, do you have a question or comment?
I have a few.
Okay.
I want to address the contact person responding to the issue. The ordinance says 20, and then in parentheses, 2.
Yeah, we'll fix that.
Yeah,
that's a typo.
But my point is, you guys are here for 2 hours, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You may not be a viable candidate for a local rep, but understand this. Everybody has the things that they have to do in a given period of time. 20 minutes is not reasonable.
You think it's too short or too long?
Matt, know this. Anybody that cares about what they do, they manage properties, will be there in 10 minutes if we can be. 20 minutes, we can be.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys have 2 hours of commitment. Okay? You're not necessarily viable to be a local rep. Understand this. Local reps also have things they have to attend to in a period of time. They may not be available in 20 minutes. Okay? I'm asking you to consider 1 hour.
Okay.
All right. You don't have to listen to me. I can put all this in an email.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay?
Emails are fine, too.
And where would I email that to?
Casey, do we have a link on the website to where they can send comments?
We can put one on there.
Well, we'll put a link on the website. So if you go to the website, go to the page that has this information, there'll be a link. You can click on it and send an email.
If you want to listen to me, I've got a couple other comments.
Sure. Go right ahead, please.
With respect to the complaint calls, I would like if you would consider limit the complaint calls to the complaint. Okay? I manage a vacation rental management company. We get people that want to just rant. Okay? Don't want to listen to it. All I want to do, deal with the complaint. And the response to their complaint should be limited to the complaint. Okay? Now, people go on for 10, 15 minutes, express themselves in a way that's unacceptable. Okay? I don't know if you can write that into your ordinance.
No, yeah. I don't know. I can tell you that, but I understand what you're
saying. Civil control.
If you could, I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
If you can't, I understand.
Okay.
Okay? Now, we hear complaints. Now, we deal with our complaints. But I don't want to listen to 15, 20 minutes of something somebody ranting about irrelevant stuff. Okay?
Well, you can let people know that.
Yeah,
yeah. Say
as a contact person.
Yeah, you just have to say, "I want to help you out. Please let me know what the problem is that I can deal with." Right.
So, the last comment I have on that issue.
Yes.
That you have the second level of response is that the either party sends the other party their response. Okay. You don't have a provision in your ordinance that if I'm the management company and somebody complains, I don't have their information. How can I send them a copy of what I send you? It's not in your ordinance. They don't provide.
Oh, so he wants to be able to respond directly to the complainant to let them know what he's done to resolve the situation.
You're asking me to send them a copy.
When the complainant calls you, that's you say to them, I'm going to respond to them and give me your phone number and I'll call you back. That would be part and parcel.
So you're saying it needs to be in writing. In your ordinance, I think it says it needs to be in writing.
No, that's the informal process is you call the contact person.
I'm talking about the more formal process.
Oh, okay.
Okay? If they don't agree with me, I have to send them a copy of what I send you. I have no means to send them a copy.
Sure. Yeah, because I understand what you're saying. There's means to do it, though. Yes, there are.
We'll have a mechanism set up to do that. Okay, anything else, sir?
No, thank
okay.
you.
Appreciate
your
time.
You.
Yes.
Hi, thanks. I have a couple comments as
sure.
well. I'll try and go through them. There was a comment earlier suggesting removing the language attempt to contact, but I think that might accidentally insert some ambiguity. If attempt to contact, I think, makes it clear, if you're calling your renter, again and again and again, and they're not answering, I think that's an attempt to contact. If you remove that and it says contact, that arguably punishes the owner for something that's not happening on their side. If makes it ambiguous. Does it count if they're not answering their phone?
Yeah, well, I think the point there and is, that if it said just attempt to contact, well, I tried to call three times, but they never answered. But if you've got, six calls coming in from the surrounding houses saying that the windows are blasting, if you keep calling and the renter doesn't answer at the contact number they've given you, then you or someone that you've designated probably better go to the site.
The local contact, I think, addresses that issue.
Yeah.
You have an obligation if you can't make phone contact with the renter,
to go
to the site and take care of it.
Yeah, right. That's the idea there, I think.
And then the comment on garbage service and the idea of getting rid of alternative garbage service. I was an avid renter for years before I finally was able to be an owner of vacation rental, and I actually don't like the phrase owner because really I am a part year resident and a middle class beach home owner who makes it work by having renters also. Some folks of my generation only need a computer to work. We can be in metro areas sometimes and here sometimes. But my garbage service is through an alternative plan. It's through our amazing housekeeper,
mm-hmm.
very well, and we want our renters to always show up with perfectly maintained garbage, nothing in it, no recycling, and so our contract for that it gets hauled every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason for that is in staying in vacation rentals, I've literally had the experience as a renter where a very diligent owner said, you have to pull the garbage 5 feet here on Tuesdays to get it picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been the renter that's come on Wednesday and seen that the people that left before me neglected to pull the garbage 5 feet, and therefore the carrier doesn't pick it up. So you have a diligent owner, and, you know, I just want to point out that can happen.
Okay.
And so, and particularly in some neighborhoods, in my neighborhood, a lot of people have to haul their garbage up a steep hill of about mm-hmm. a half acre to get to where the service picks it up. That's another reason. Some renters wouldn't have the physical capability to put the garbage to the curb.
Yeah, that's why I think we were thinking that if we did put this requirement in, we'd also include using the concierge-type service if the franchisee offers it.
Correct, but I'm pointing out that some of us have in place contracts with our maintenance personnel to haul it right in to the drop-off every single time someone leaves the house. And that's helpful because that might be three drop-offs in January and four times a week in the summer, just depending on who's there. And then the other point was, it was a little ambiguity between the summary and the ordinance. And I think the summary suggested that owners have to have a posted, maybe I don't have the summary in front of me now, but it was the online summary, suggested that owners have to have the identification out for their dwelling, but the ordinance itself said if the dwelling is identified as a vacation rental, then this signage has to be there. And I think the if language is helpful for parts of the county that are more remote and maybe have security concerns. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want a big sign at the road of a very private place saying, hey thieves, this might be open right now. So I just wanted to point out that slide. I think in the summary it suggested that everyone would have a big, this is a vacation rental sign with a contract number. And I think the ordinance as written is okay because it suggests that, you know, if someone's properly there and right up on your doorstep, then they can see the contact number.
Okay.
So your concern, let me make sure I understand, is your concern with having signage in the first place or where it's located?
Where it's located.
Okay.
And so for example, I have my address at the street. If, and I don't think the ordinance says this, but if the house numbers have to be on the house and visible from the street, that's impossible for the laws of physics because you can't see the house from the street. It doesn't say this is a vacation rental at the street. And then there's a really big lot and driveway and you have to get down to the house from that. So you can find the house numbers from the street, but then my view would be I'd then put, if you actually made it to the house, you know, and were a neighbor knocking on my door that knows the way around that neighborhood, you'd then have the contact information.
Okay. You know, the big, just one moment, please, just I want to react to that. On garbage, you know, the complaints that I have heard related to garbage, I would say fall into two areas. You know, the garbage strewn, left behind, obviously that's easy to identify the source. But then the number of folks I've heard from who say they go out to empty their trash one morning, neighbors, and suddenly find their cans filled up with trash that's not theirs. And unfortunately, I don't know any way we can really identify whether it came from that place, or that place. So, go ahead.
And the other point on garbage would be, frankly, we have bears and we have mountain lions. We have seen them both.
Yep.
We have seen them both traipsing within garbage toppling distance of our property. You know, so again, having our maintenance person, our cleaning staff responsible, you know, there have been times the wild animal gets into the garbage and they sweep it up and collect it and haul it. So, it's definitely out there for those of us in unincorporated Lincoln County.
So maybe if we did want to look at a modification to that, perhaps, say, produce proof of a professional cleaning service that carries out garbage as part of the contract, well, or just, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just saying I like the alternative plan, because I think there are alternative plans.
That's why it was in there.
Okay. I recognize you, and then you again, sir. Go ahead,
me?
Please. Yes.
Yes, about the contact information for short-term rental, I would like to see that the information is visible. I shouldn't have to walk down to a house and look all over to see if this a rental or not. I think it should be visible from the street, that we would have a number that we can call if there is a problem. I just don't feel that it's my business when people are staying there to go down to a house and snoop around looking for that information if there is something that I want to call about.
I'd have somebody pop out the front door and say, who the heck are
right,
you?
Right, yeah, so, right. Yeah.
Well, usually they have them near the front door.
Mm-hmm.
I would have checked that out before anybody's even in there, so you have that information handy for yourself.
Right.
As far as the garbage, I can't quite understand what she's saying, but...
Well, I mean, they have a professional cleaning service cleaning the rental, but part of her contract is that they haul the garbage out as part of their cleanup. Sir, in the back.
So I want to speak first to her comment,
And
that is, you're going to ask that every vacation rental applying for a license notifies everybody within 250 feet. She will have the information.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have to go look for it.
Right.
Okay? So... doesn't have to go look for it. Back to garbage, it's an issue. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I've been doing vacation rentals for 10 years. It's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend your ordinance should focus on the people that do this professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson's, whoever. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's an issue. We always have to pick up excess garbage. As a company, they can't keep up. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to keep up with the garbage that vacation rental people generate. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We do it at our expense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But if you don't put that in place, I think you're going to have a problem. Okay? With this other lady was asking for, I don't say that it's not acceptable, but you're going to have a problem with it. She may be able to do it. Most people can't.
Okay. Appreciate the input. Other questions, comments, thoughts? Yes?
I was just going to respond to the idea that, I heard... the nice lady's comment about not wanting to walk up to somebody's house if there is a wild raging party. Where we are unincorporated county, we do have very massive lot sizes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
true.
In my particular layout, I have a neighbor who's also a vacation rental owner and a part-time resident. And then the other side of us is a family home in trust. And I could tell you where the biggest parties are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Vacation Rental 1 and Vacation Rental 2.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of would have to be close enough down somebody's driveway to figure out whether the offender is at house 1 or house 2 or house 3. Because from the street, with half-acre driveways, you just wouldn't know. So the complaint, you know, you might make the complaint against the person you personally dislike, and it might actually be one of two other people's properties that's the big party.
Call the police.
Yeah, well, that's what we call the
remember, people. That's why, again, we have law enforcement involved with the process here. If it can't be resolved by the neighbors, then we have law enforcement involved.
Yeah. Yes,
it does seem like that's a rare thing with a half-acre driveway or half-mile?
Half-acre.
Mm. Half-acre. You have a half-acre lot?
No, like almost an acre lot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that I don't think that's a common thing. It's certainly not up in our end of the county anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have those driveways, which are that length.
But okay. My point is the county regulation is a lot of different kinds of properties. It could be a 5-acre farm saying, hey, yeah. I'm be a farmer for the weekend. It could be areas that look like a very dense city. And so we kind of have to consider all the different...
That's true, because this will apply outside in all the area outside the cities, not only Glendeaton and Lincoln, but also Bayshore, and I don't know where else we might see these popping up. Yes, ma'am?
In the beginning of this session, you mentioned that you were a cub reporter at some communications outlet.
The Newport News Times. Newport I was a reporter. No, actually, wait a minute. Actually, I was news director at KMBT Radio back then. Yeah.
That was in the early 90s?
Yeah, early to mid-90s.
And you were in...
He was in the same job he's in now, County Legal Counsel. He's been in that job 30 years this year.
30 years. Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now you said
Now, you said at that point in time, there was kind of a big surge in vacation rentals in the north end of town.
Right, Roads End. It hadn't been annexed yet.
And they had put together some of these same issues.
Well, no, I don't know that everything reached the draft.
There was a group of folks in the Roads End area, and actually Roads End was one of those areas that I think started out even before my time.
Mm-hmm.
It has always had a number of vacation rentals. I can remember being a young attorney many years ago and getting a bar bulletin with advertising Roads Inn houses for rent. I mean, 35 years ago, I remember seeing that kind of stuff. And what happened in those days is the group from Roads Inn that came to us wanted to ban. They wanted no vacation rental dwellings. There were some communities in Oregon around that time. Cannon Beach, I think, was a classic one, in which they were actually limiting VRDs. Or eliminating. Cities can do that.
But counties
can't. Advertise out it's the way to deal with land use laws and non-conforming uses. They were able to do some things we couldn't do. We suggested as an alternative a licensing program.
But I don't think it even actually came to draft.
No, we actually suggested the idea of a licensing program to the homeowners association basically came to us. In Roads End.
Roads End or Kennedy?
Roads End.
They said they wanted all or nothing. They wanted them all gone or they didn't want to see anything. So the board at that time said, well, you know, we offered up the idea of doing a licensing program. They didn't want that, so we didn't pursue it.
Yes.
So basically you've been dealing with this, and you in the same capacity, John, right, for 30 years, and you're kind of new on board with this, but all on top of it, too. So, is this some reinvention of the wheel? Or
no, in this sense, we did not receive a lot of the complaints. Complaints we received only came from Roads End. In those days, we did not receive complaints from other areas besides.
But they were the same kinds of complaints, the same parking and garbage, and noise, and
amongst other things.
Yeah,
damage issues, whatever they were complaints.
Yeah.
So. Have there been some resolution?
Yeah, one of the things we suggested to the folks in Roads End is, and because this was only part of a larger issue, they wanted better roads, they wanted better streets, or sewer water, but the problem with Roads End, it was, had all the elements of being a city, and they wanted that urban level of city services, and they didn't want to be in a city. See, that got resolved when Roads End was annexed, and I don't even want to start down the road. What happened with Roads End and annexation, that was an issue in and of itself, a whole different issue. But basically, this was only a part of what they were looking for, the full panoply of urban services. They wanted all the amenities of a city without paying city taxes.
Yeah.
And that got resolved when they got annexed.
But they had sewer and water and things like that. Some of the bigger lots probably. So I guess I'm not understanding why this isn't moving forward. If the whole scheme of things has been worked on for 30 years.
Well, could I respond?
Sure.
Really, it hasn't been. No, it hasn't. Essentially, the issue got put on the shelf when the Roads End homeowners said a licensing program wasn't acceptable to them. Basically, I would say what we do as elected officials and as a county organization, it's really driven by what comes from the public. I mean, we don't just go out and say, well, gee, we need to create another layer of government and give the sheriff's office something more to do and come up with a licensing program and an enforcement mechanism. You know, this is my 12th year now as a commissioner, and I would say in the first 10 years, I would get an occasional complaint every now and then about vacation rentals, but it's really about 2 years ago that it just seemed to reach a crescendo, and we were getting them regularly, again and again, people saying, you know, again, the things we've talked about, and it's not being resolved. And so that's when we said, let's pull up the idea of a licensing program, and that's when, you know, because we did get receptivity from the community, in the first couple of rounds of public meetings we had, that's when we put Mr. Belmont to work looking at models, again, in large part, as somebody mentioned, he did work from the Tillamook County licensing program, but he pulled elements from other ordinances as well, and that's how this evolved, and that's why it's before us right now.
Okay. And how long have we been working on that?
About 2 years now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we coming in a year's distance of,
Well, hopefully sooner than that. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, we're doing these listening sessions this month. It'll be back on the Board of Commissioners agenda, whatever the first Wednesday in May is. And at that point, you know, like I say, there could, again, depending on what comes back to us and the public testimony at that meeting, I would imagine we'd schedule at least one more public hearing formally before the commissioners, before taking action. But hopefully, you know, whether we want to adopt it as is, tweak it a bit, but hopefully within the next May or June, we'll see some final action on this. And if there is favorable sentiment on the board, you need at least two out of the three of us to put this in place, that it could be, again, I've got to hedge things, but... in a best case scenario this summer, it would take effect 90 days after enactment.
Well, we're going to talk
about whether we do that still. Okay.
So,
any quarter.
Maybe this summer?
Maybe this summer.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, on a totally different subject. First of all, I appreciate what you're doing, and it's an excellent idea. Before I moved to the coast, I did a lot of research and got the newspaper for several years to see what was going on and where the problems were, and determined that VRDs were an issue, and I didn't want to live around them, so I don't live on the west side of 101. However, I do hear what people are saying, and if I did live there, I would be concerned. And an issue of money, since we're setting up a new board and a contact within the police station. Do we have funding for this?
Yes.
Yeah, it'll essentially be paid through the licensing fees.
I can tell you
in large part.
Just in anticipation of this, we have prepared and are submitting a budget that will cover. We're already going to pick up some of the costs this fiscal year, and there will be a budget in place July 1st. We have a specific budget to do these activities. I'm just anticipating. Obviously, if for some reason the board says no, the budget won't get any revenue, won't spend anything. But no, we are anticipating this is going to go forward in some form, so that's included in the proposed budget.
And how many people will be hired?
It's basically not quite a half-time person. We think you can do it with a half-time person.
Okay. Yeah,
but remember, and when I say that, that's the new person on board.
Right.
This person will be coordinating with the sheriff's office. Sheriff's office does a lot. They utilize all their people to do these things. So that person will, actually is someone who has worked in the sheriff's office. And we'll be working with other people within the office to help in those areas, especially in the enforcement side.
And then from a purely cynical point of view, if I lived in Glen Eagan Beach on the other side of 101 from where I live, and I was, sounds like, surrounded by vacation rentals, it sounds like I would have to go house by house, street by street, and make my little list of all the contact people.
No, you'd be notified. That's part of the requirement of the license, that within
250 feet
that you have to identify.
Which really, I don't know that that's far enough, because there's...
That's what we want to hear. If that's somebody saying that's not far enough, then we want to hear what you say about that.
Okay. Let's see. I think the gentleman in the back, then this gentleman, then John.
Let them go first. I've already spoken.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm just curious, in your budgeting, I want to call it process. Mm-hmm. How many VRD licenses do you anticipate in COVID?
That is the million-dollar question. I say that a little facetiously, but we don't know. And we honestly do not know.
So I'm just assuming a half-time person would be probably $40,000,
$50,000. I think we've got a budget of around, I want to say, $50,000.
Divided by 90?
Yeah. So divided by, remember the initial one's a little bit more expensive, $175. Yeah, so you can see the math. We did sort of a math there, but that is one of the things that we will.
I mean, that's like 5,000 VRD licenses in the county that you'd be maintaining.
No, not that many. If you have $200 per license, roughly, you have five licenses per $1,000, you have 250.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, we don't know. Initially, what we're going to do is commit to doing this, and then we're going to see once we license it, what does that generate?
And what was our experience when Rhodes End came into Lincoln City that we heard from the city that we were capturing
the majority, but not all of them?
So.
And that was a very tight area there that we kind of knew. Mm-hmm. So what we do know is we know we have a pretty good feel for those that are managed by professional management companies. Well, we have no feel for those that are owner-managed.
Is there a density limit on a block, two blocks, certain area? Can you have all of them be vacation?
Wow. Right now, yes.
Well, will there a limit be put on it?
Not in this program.
If you want to see what you start talking about those issues, that's where Lincoln City has now spent 5 years back and forth and back and forth. Dealing with that particular issue. And Lincoln City, I think, honestly, is kind of backing away from that a little bit. They're trying to do some other things first. And there are cities have different tools than the counties do in terms of doing some things like that, a much different approach to doing things. So we're not proposing that at this point, no.
And
the reason I ask that, because where I live, and several of us in here, the whole block, there's no resident there. So, for example, I'm on the second block away from the two bad guys.
Right.
How will I be notified if I'm more than 250 feet away?
You need information. If you know where that is located, you can call us and get the information.
On who's going to be handling it, the contract person. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I think maybe some people are aware that I'm kind of a person who beats the drum significantly for affordable housing. And when somebody heard that I was working with establishing a vacation rental licensing program, they said, well, don't you know that vacation rentals are taking up a share of our housing stock? And how can you do this? And I said, well, you got to remember, it is still the property owner's legal right live in a unit, or if they want to rent it out, whether they rent it by the month, by the night, that's their legal right. And this is an attempt, again, to manage and mitigate the problems that we've been hearing about.
Is there any control on building these huge McMansions?
No, everything that is being built within the current limits of the zoning. And, you know, somebody approached me with the idea, well, couldn't we impose further building requirements on, like, total footprint, setbacks, building heights? And that would, I think, you know, frankly, set off a big political battle. And another thing that comes into play, if, I don't know if you remember a few years back, Oregon voters passed ballot measure 49, which basically says you can do with your property whatever was legal at the time you bought it. And if the government imposes additional regulations, which diminishes the value of your property, the government has to pay you financial compensation. So I know there aren't a lot of empty lots left in Glendon, but say somebody buys an existing house for a teardown, a two-story house that doesn't have a view, but the zoning would allow them to go to a third story that would have a view. And if we tried to say, no, you can't have that third story, that's a takings under Measure 49, and we'd have to pay compensation.
There's a whole acre available there.
Oh, that's true.
But getting back to the parking situation, that's the thing I'm most mm-hmm. concerned about, because it's just a little tiny road. There's mm-hmm. no off-street parking, really. Mm-hmm. There's hardly enough space for two cars, mm-hmm. you know, one going, one coming. So what about these cars that park all up and down the street?
That's a problem.
You're charging me?
No, we call the property manager then when they're out on the street because they're in the way.
That's a problem. It's a problem when you as a homeowner invite, you know, all of your friends and family to come and they park along the street too. And, you know, the parking, I will say that it's probably the most difficult issue that we have here in terms of how you deal with that. And we're continuing to look and see in other jurisdictions. Everyone I've talked to that deals with this says parking is the probably number one issue mm-hmm. that they have to deal with, and it's very difficult.
But
and
you're supposed to provide off street.
Well, we're trying to address it. We're uh-huh. trying to address it. Am I going to say that this is the be all end all for that issue? No, I don't know. We're going to see.
We hope it'll mitigate it.
We hope it's
but there's nothing in the paperwork that would address vacation rentals for parking on the street.
No. In the same way that there's nothing in this that right now with your subdivision that precludes you from having 30 of your favorite friends come over every night and park. I mean, I'm just saying that in that sense, there's nothing, you know, remember, any parking regulations we do is going to apply what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah, you can't prohibit
business. We're not going to say you can park here yeah. as the property owner, but, your neighbor can't.
Well, there's no incentive then to have off-street parking if they can park wherever they want.
No, again, we're going to do some requirements. We're going to try and address those.
For the parking plan, and if there are any new ones that go in where they will have to have off-street parking.
Yes.
John, you had your hand up a while ago. Did you still want to say something? Or?
Yeah. Okay, I'd like to please. Just kind of sure. touch on a few things. Okay. That I've heard and a couple of new things.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, appreciate seeing Bill and Wayne here, and really appreciate that you guys are taking the time to make this public mm-hmm. process. I think when things are done openly and everybody mm-hmm. gets their input, that's always a very positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
No question kind of on the unlicensed vacation rentals. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to uncover a bunch of those and a bunch of additional revenue and whatever additional costs there are and mm-hmm. hiring a person. I think you guys will make a profit on that. Comments that I heard on garbage and signage. Mm-hmm. And remember, I'm speaking on behalf of, we have, this is the gentleman that, one of the folks that run the group for me, but I think we have currently, including Tillamook County, close to 200 vacation rentals that we manage.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a number of monthly rentals that we manage in a separate program. And so I really applaud you guys for taking time and not rushing into this, because mm-hmm. the other side of this is, and I'm a lifelong resident of Lincoln County, love this place, raised my family here. But the other side of this is it does affect a lot of folks that are working. We have 70-some employees. And listen, I mean, this economy, mm-hmm. we are a tourist-based economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, understand there can be issues with vacation rentals, monthly rentals, permanent residences, mm-hmm. and that's why we need some level of regulation. So I'm all for mm-hmm. that. Let's also remember, though, that tourism is the basis of our economy, and we all like going to our local restaurant, but that local restaurant makes 80% of its money, you know, in 90 days. So as far as garbage goes, I mean, listen, that's you guys have a great proposal, fully mm-hmm. support it. Signage, it was funny, when we started by accident managing vacation rentals, no company anywhere in the county ever put up a sign. It was like they wanted to hide the contact. I'm proud to say that I know of, we were the very first ones to start putting it up there. And so I'm very supportive of having that signage up there so that everybody can see and know who to call if there is a problem. So mm-hmm. I really support that. I think the only one potential issue that I see with that is there's some homeowners associations, Bella Beach would be a prime example, where they don't allow signage, contact information on the home. And I think that's kind of one kind of weird deal where the HOA doesn't allow it. At the same time, the HOA not only allows but encourages vacation rentals. So in that instance, it's almost kind of self-regulating. That would be kind of the one exception that I would see where possibly there's a problem where even though it's a good idea, you can't comply with it. I have a very much a shared passion with Commissioner Hall on affordable housing. I think the one difference that I have is that I think it's been mostly a myth that vacationals take away from monthly rental housing. Mm-hmm. Is there a percentage overlap? Yeah. Is it single digit? No question. Mm-hmm. We manage both. The properties that are prime for vacation rentals are generally not the ones that under any circumstance are going to be used for monthly rentals. And the ones that generally are used for monthly rentals, at least affordable monthly rentals, those are actually more profitable as monthly rentals. I know because I own a lot of monthly rentals. I own zero vacation rentals. And I would never turn any of my monthly rentals into vacation rentals. So I think there's a bit of a, and my friend Kip has spoken to that in the past too. I think there's a bit of a, there's a huge affordable housing issue. Mm-hmm. We all know that. I think blaming it on vacation rentals, I think a lot of things are easy to blame on mm-hmm. them. I think that's one that's kind of unfair, in my opinion.
Okay.
Occupancy, I don't see a big problem with the way that you guys have it structured. I think that probably one of the reasons why this is now coming up in the county is you probably had a relatively small batch of bad actors or improperly managed vacation mm-hmm. rentals, and that kind of can spoil the pot and taint things for everybody. The one thing with occupancy that I would suggest is that some of the big sleeper homes, if you get the wrong people, that exacerbates it, no question. Mm-hmm. But we have some that we manage that also attract multi-generational families that generate a ton of tax revenue. So I guess my question would be, homes that are, I also understand building code-wise, there's some differentiation between pre-2010 and post-2010. So one of my questions would kind of be, hey, if you have somebody that's been operating for a while under these rules that was built pre-2010, do you grandfather them until it's sold? Something to consider.
Any thoughts on that, Wayne, or do you just want to take that under advisement?
I'll look at that, but I think probably not. I think, again, the documents we're going to do is for the VRD license part of this thing. I think that's the way we want to approach it. What you're talking about is more of a land use non-conforming.
So is under the current proposal, is it all vacation rentals, no matter when they were built and no matter how long they've been operating, will be limited to 16?
So you're not grandfathering
anything? We're not grandfathering.
Right.
Nothing
under the current proposal.
And I know you're a very smart guy, so I know you must have some legal way to do that. But maybe my comment and request would be to at least consider some form of grandfathering pre-2010. I think it's always hard when someone's been operating under one set of rules and it's changed and something's taken, that, you know, that's when you get a little bit more of that for. I like this, mm-hmm. you know, in general. I think it's good because I mm-hmm. think you guys have kept it simple, definable, predictable. The stuff with parking, for me, that's, and I was on the consensus committee for City of Lincoln City, mm-hmm. and for me it's like, hey, it's either legal or it's illegal. Where it's a problem, it can be a problem certainly for a vacation rental. It can also be a problem for a monthly rental permanent resident. So thank you guys for giving the time, having a very open door and an open process on this. And thank you all for letting me talk for longer than I usually like to.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Okay. Others? Yes, sir, in the back.
All right. So on your behalf, I want to mm-hmm. speak. I think Attorney Mr. Belmont didn't speak to it clearly. Parking, I've watched videos you guys are addressing with the fire department. Fire lanes, that will define viable, accessible parking. Okay? On your behalf, I wanted to mention that because I think it's important. It's important. Fire lanes have to be acknowledged. Okay? and you didn't mention it, I wanted to. Okay? So the other thing I wanted to ask is, nobody's talked about it that I know, ordinance effective date. Okay, it could, from the effective date, could take 60 days to get a license. What happens with existing reservations and the servicing of those reservations during the period between the effective date and getting a license?
Yeah. And that's actually a very good point, something that I've been thinking about a little bit more too. While the draft, the effective date, we're going to have to talk about this, because we're going to have to begin a date in which people can get the license, so we can go, you know, make sure it's out there. There has to be a time frame in there for people, a reasonable time frame for people to get the license. So that is something we're going to have to address.
So you'll probably write something in that'll be like a 60-day.
There's a 90 days before it actually goes into effect. So
maybe it goes into effect immediately, perhaps.
But you don't have to get a license.
But you have to have a grace period of some kind.
Yeah, right. We recognize that we have to have a time frame for people to comply with this.
So do you think maybe using the emergency clause?
No.
Okay, but
no, I'm not going to do that. Okay. But there are ways to do that, and that's actually an issue that we've thought about too. We just haven't drafted the language for that.
But say, yeah, it takes effect on one date, and then say you've got the 16th, that you must have the license within,
or at least
whatever.
File the license.
Yeah, something like that. I think Kip had something, and then the lady in the back. Yes.
Okay, I'll try to make one quick.
Sure.
Under health and safety, did I see in your ordinance that you're going to put some health and safety requirements as far as proper egress out the windows in case there's a fire? Well, we just had a fire in Glen Beach. I'm wondering why you wouldn't require it.
Because right now that's addressed through the building code.
Yes.
So already there. So, and the issue in Glen Beach, as I did confirm, was not a VRD. That was not an issue with VRD. So at this point, we're not going to go. We're trying to make a fairly simplified ordinance. There are some places they deal and have much more requirements there. But what we're relying on right now is it meets, you know, it's built to building code standards, and that's what we're going to look at. So we're not going that direction.
And then also, what are sleeping areas?
That's defined under the building code. We can use that as a basis for doing it. That may be an issue. I've heard that from a couple of other places too. I'm going to talk to the building inspector a little bit more about that and see if we need to further define that particular.
Okay, and then also traveler's accommodation license, which is a requirement in the county.
Yeah, we don't address, for instance, this doesn't apply to, there are a variety of other uses that are out there. Traveler's accommodations, bed and breakfasts, which are regulated under the zoning code already, those kinds of things. This is not going to address those particular kinds of uses. They're already addressed under other regulations.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I realized I forgot maybe my most important comment, but it seems there's an assumption in here that when complaints come in, that those complaints are sort of timely and specific. And I'm reflecting on, I've actually been a volunteer neighborhood mediator for several years, so I really appreciated you adding a mediation proposal, because I'm sure there's, you know, a few very bad vacation rental owners. I'm sure there's a few very bad neighbors that might never be pleased, no matter what happens. But it seems to me, from actually mediating these kinds of disputes, under Section 8D, there's sort of an implicit idea there that the complaining neighbor is going to do this in the moment when they're upset. And I think that would be very helpful to have a time element for complaints, because nothing's more frustrating than a renter leaving and saying, gosh, you know, it was a bummer, the vacation rental next door, they stayed up all night, they were loud. You know, I say, gosh, I could have stopped that for you. We have a good neighbor agreement between us. And so now in my contract and rules, I say, if you have a problem with noise, call us immediately. We have good neighbor agreements, we can stop it. And it hasn't been a problem since. But I think if a citizen who's near a vacation rental doesn't act on this immediately, it's going to really sabotage the process you're putting in place. So maybe considering something about, you know, having that complaint be timely, because obviously if you get this call 2 weeks after your renter left, then whether you act in 20 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour is kind of irrelevant. The horse has left the barn. And so I was going to make the same comment on Section 9, Sub 1, you know, with communicating in writing and posting at the short-term dwelling. I'm not sure if that means nailing it to my door or what, but again, having some maybe some guidelines or some framework of the expectations of a complaint being specific as to date, as to what was happening. I assume the written procedure would be after the fact, but if this written procedure is employed and someone says, I can imagine them sitting down and saying, oh, well, you know, it's just all the time. And you say, well, here's my ledger, here's who was there, here's when they arrived, here's who, when they left, here's their driver's license I made them give me when they checked in. Well, it's just every time. You know, well, you know, and so I think maybe giving some guidelines for specificity and timeliness of complaints would be really helpful, not at enforcement, but at actually getting people to talk to each other and work it out as human beings, because I've found, and frankly, I've done most of these things on my own because it's just good business and good neighboring, you know, but if people aren't talking, getting them talking directly and sooner is going to help solve the real issue. You know, when I trained in neighborhood mediation, my trainer, who was amazing, always says, it's never about the fence. And, you know, with some of these things, it might be about the garbage, but it's never about the garbage. It's about respect. It's about communication. It's about people working things out. And so I think perhaps giving some specificity as to time and making that communication as quick and direct as possible might be helpful for both sides.
Okay.
Okay, I'd like to make a comment about that. I've been listening to a number of you folks who are obviously from the industrial side, and I can tell you from the 2 years or so that I've been involved in the growing issue here of rentals, and we live within 150 feet of three different rentals ourselves, so we have personal experience. My thoughts for you folks would simply be this. If more of you, and I suspect the people who show up at our little informational meetings and other things, are really probably among the best folks as far as representing the industry. The problem is that you're not the reason, then, if my assessment is correct, you're not the reason that we're here. We're here because of the outliers. We've got a couple of real bad outliers on Division Street and over there on Neptune and Glen Eden Beach, okay, that represent the worst that can happen in an unregulated environment. All right, and that's why we need some regulation. You're very right, sir. We need some. Okay, because we got some outliers here who are dangerous to the peace and tranquility of our neighborhoods. Okay. My simple thought to you folks, to maybe convey to your compatriots in the real property management industry, is this. If you would just simply have taken the time to have dropped by those residences around which, you know, is the residence that you're managing and said, hi, I'm Joe Blow of Real Property Management. If you got a problem with anybody that's over there, you call me. Here's my number. You know how many times that's happened to me, to us, even though there are rentals in our area, in our area? Zero. Absolutely zero. Okay? And maybe you're doing that, but these rentals that are near us that we're complaining about, they're not rented through you folks.
By the way, okay. I would like to know from you people who handle these rentals all the time, and you, how do you count noses and cars?
What was the question?
How do you count the number of people coming in to where you're renting?
So we do it, and I'm very lucky. I have a really very blessed to have a great staff, so I don't really do much of anything.
I don't.
My staff, they do it the same way for monthly rentals as they do for vacation rentals, which is they don't do it. Now, that being said, for vacation rentals, different from monthly rentals, we, the way that we do it is, and Aaron, you can jump in here, is we very much are very strict in the way that the documents that need to be signed electronically, the way the property is advertised, and you don't like my answer so far, but you might when I finish. We have licensed professional security that we make the investment both in-house and through subcontractors that go by the properties on a regular basis, including from time to time when they're not occupied. Now, that being said, there's a million things that I know that our company can do that are better. I hear what this gentleman has just said. I hear that all the time. Anytime there's a community meeting, some version of what he said, and it's so true. And we encourage our homeowners to get to know their neighbors and to be cooperative. And so I think that's right. There is a sometimes just a goodwill gesture, a handshake, going next door makes a big difference. We've had some folks that are permanent residents thank us for the security guys getting to know them and
great.
Checking on their property.
Those
and
people are lucky.
We do share a commonality in that for 15
There's
years
no way
straight,
the county can
I lived in Rhodes
that, right?
End, okay, with
what about
my family,
buses coming in?
And I was constantly surrounded by vacation rentals, most of which, for a time period, we didn't manage. And so I've seen, listen, if there's one thing that a guy remembers, right, and probably females do, but certainly for me, it's when you're kept up all night. Mm-hmm. If it happens one time in 10 years, you remember it, and it doesn't go away. It is irritating, and I've had that happen. So
that
is why I support license, tax, regulate, but let's not eliminate. And let's also remember, you know, we're in a new economy. It's not just vacation rentals. It's Uber. It's a sharing economy. Things are changing, and there is a proper balance. And I think that Commissioner Hall and Mr. Belma, it's the right approach. Let's take time, let's hear everything from all sides, and let's balance the economy, because along with affordable housing, if people don't have jobs, they for sure can't get a place to rent. So thank you for your comments, and I agree with it. And you know what we will do is we will re-encourage our staff and our homeowners to do exactly what you said.
That would be a great step. They want to know that there's somebody that they can call at 2 a.m. in the morning, and there will be a prompt response, and it'll be taken care of.
And they
that's probably
that.
90% of your problem right there.
And
prompt
they
response.
Deserve that. You're right about that.
Okay.
I'd like to offer up something on some what's been said, you know, and the limitations of this. I think somebody asked, how would we monitor occupancy? Okay, let's say we've got a home advertised and is allowed to sleep 16, and the sheriff responds at 1 in the morning, maybe because the street is blocked, a neighbor can't get through, there's a loud crashing party, and he walks in, and there's 20 people there. And four of them say, oh, no, sorry, we're staying at one of the motels in Lincoln City.
No.
Realistically, he's probably not going to do a bed check. On the other hand, if there's 40 people in there, he shuts down a party and says, all you folks who are not staying here for the night, please go back to wherever you are staying. And if nobody moves to leave, that's when I would imagine, Wayne, then they start saying, wait a minute, we've got an occupancy issue here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's going to be a judgment call. Yeah. You know,
you can't rent someplace and then invite 50 of your best friends to come over. Everybody counts that's in the house.
No, only nightly occupancy. We don't have any legal, because that came up with somebody, some of the ones that are like hosting big weddings. There might be a dozen family members staying there, but they've invited 50 people to come to attend a wedding overlooking the beach, and there's no legal or practical way to regulate guests. As long as they're not, again, causing noise, parking type issues.
Oh, well, you know they are.
Yeah. Sir?
I can't believe that.
Yes. I was going to add to the solution feature, but the biggest thing is response. So also reiterating what they're saying. Having little kids, I don't sleep much the way it is, and I can live with that. but if my neighbor's making noise, it takes a different chord right there.
Yeah. And we only get a little older, too.
Yeah. So a couple things. We talked about it, actually, in front of the commission. It mm-hmm. brought up, it spoke there, but communication prior to even rental policies, we've actually switched to an electronic e-signature mm-hmm. For all parties that's required with addendums. We've gone overboard because we want to have that relationship, prevent the issues. Prevention is better than solution, although you want solution in case mm-hmm. of an issue.
Exactly.
I think that there are methods and measures to that, and that assist. As a company, we function a little bit differently too. And then I've got an on-call manager, housekeeper, and maintenance guy. And then I've got security, so I've got four people available 365 days a year, mm-hmm. So that I can respond. I was going to say in the 60-minute versus the 20-minute. 30-minute is what I require. My staff, they have to be on scene from the time of report. And, if there are situations were to arise, you'll kick someone out. I mean, I think the biggest thing, again, is a solution aspect, and that someone wants to be able to sleep, be it mm-hmm. 10:31, be it 2 a.m., mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily matter. So just some of those measures in place, some of the verbiage that you could mm-hmm. attempt to contact versus address, and some of the people that maybe live in Portland that aren't using a local contact, just calling someone doesn't solve the issue. So that's, I think, why you guys are approaching it from a local contact, which we read last time. So,
yeah.
Well, you just blew me away by saying that people can have big parties during the daytime, have 50 people there, and that doesn't count.
As long as they're not causing any parking violations.
My gosh, I've worked in the timeshare industry for mm-hmm. many, many years. They strictly enforce if four people can sleep here, eight people, that doesn't mean 20 can come over during the daytime, and they count babies, too. Mm-hmm.
Wayne?
We're not going that
way. Yeah, I might as well forget everything.
There's got to be some limits on what we are able to do, capable to do. We're going to try and address some of these big mm-hmm. issues. The big events, I think you brought to our attention, we're going to address. Are we going to address every issue you're talking about here? No, I'm not going to try and promise that, because we aren't going to be able to do that. We think that this is going to be as good an attempt as we've seen out there to be able to deal with these big impacts.
Yeah.
Well, a wedding is an occasional thing, mm-hmm. a family reunion. And mm-hmm. you still need to make arrangements for parties, but they're not all spending the night.
Right.
But they have weddings every weekend with all these people.
And just as an example, and I'll speak up again, because I'm an independent. Mm-hmm. I'm a half-year resident, mm-hmm. And I hired local people, and I know local people, mm-hmm. So I'm not like these fellows that have a big agency, mm-hmm. but, just to kind of respond to this gal's concerns, if you're among my neighbors, when I knocked on your mm-hmm. door, I already said, this is my number, call me. I know it's a giant house, but I only allow 12 people. If you see more than that, a big party, you call me, I'll stop it. Our agreement says we can terminate the occupancy if we don't like what's happening, And it seems like getting the liaison with the sheriff's mm-hmm. office and that is a good first step. Mm-hmm. But as far as the parties, we also say, if you need more people, talk to us. We can help you solve the problem. I can't tell you how many times we've filled our neighbor's rental because mm-hmm. someone just starts the conversation mm-hmm. with, we want to fudge up. And I'm like, we have these great neighbors. And so instead of too many people in one house, it's two rentals. And as far as parties we've allowed, we require a separate agreement for that. We have a shuttle plan for them. And it's only been local residents' anniversary parties. So our parties have been for locals throwing big, we have a huge common space, and we just work with them and put it out there. So I'm just kind of getting that out there that, yeah, it comes up, but, as more of the new sharing economy, new mm-hmm. younger person, independent mm-hmm. owner, and person who lives here half the year, I think it's important that I say that because I think in a lot of the regulatory processes, like Lincoln City, they sort of don't know I exist. Mm-hmm. And not only do I exist, all my friends exist, and they're coming.
Yep.
Other people are aging out of the system, and we're aging into it.
Yep.
So
Okay. Thank you. Yes.
I heard some of the dialogue about how the owner is going to be processed or treated for violation of the tenants he or she is secured for that period of vacation rental. So if Joe Idaho is speeding through Lincoln City and he gets a ticket, and then he gets a noise violation, you know, in Glen Eden Beach, and, you know, maybe he's littering at Crater Lake or flicked a cigarette butt out of the window, we seem to be all so terrified that Joe will never come back. Well, with the millions of people that come to Oregon, who needs Joe?
Yeah.
I'd rather see the wonderful people that come to appreciate our state. They don't have to go through the state and litter and burn and
mess things up.
You know, pollute our entire state because they're on vacation. They don't have to follow rules.
You know,
so why aren't they, will they get a ticket?
Oh, yeah, that's something I said up front, and I'll emphasize again. Yeah, Joe Idaho will still get his 2 a.m. Citation for the noise fine. My only point was, if Joe isn't ever planning to come back to Oregon anyway, that's of limited value, and it really doesn't incentivize the owner to do a better job of managing the property.
Or you can tell Joe he doesn't have to come back as long as he doesn't have to pay as long as he doesn't come back.
Ever.
Well, realistically, I mean, we never tell them that. They know that.
You've got the owners that are trying to, you know, you get the family group there. Uncle Joe's got post-traumatic. Has a suitcase full of booze and a gun, and he's shooting it off at night. Who knew that was going to happen?
Sure.
Renters can't predict weird things happening.
Yes.
I mean, we've had permanent renters, and we thought the assistant manager had the brains to let us know when the kitchen sink was leaking.
There's a pot underneath it.
For 3 months. He's assistant manager of a business. Uh-huh. We don't fix it. We send professional people in, so we're not snooping.
Yeah.
But the renters.
Just empty the pot once in a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
The renters are kind of a problem that they can't predict.
Either. Oh, sure. Sure. John.
I mean, this is fascinating. I find myself agreeing with this rail quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I like that solution because that's not something that the property manager caused. That's something that Joe caused.
Right.
And Joe, in true story, I mean, you can verify this. I have a neighbor named Joe. Sometimes he does a few things that I don't like. And, you know, he should be treated no differently than the visitor Joe. And the ticket, if he commits something that is an offense, should absolutely be ticketed and taken care of. The only difference is, when Joe is a full-time resident, he's not leaving Oregon. So, the only upside, to when the guy commits an offense and is a vacation renter, probably he isn't coming back. So, as opposed to the permanent renter type situation or permanent resident.
Are you putting anything in on landscaping like that should recognize the neighborhood and look like the neighborhood, not just one big gravel pit?
No.
And again, that's something, that's a land use kind of thing, and a lot of places have that regulated through their homeowners association.
But it is also in the licensing of a lot of different city vacation rentals.
Lincoln City has done it. I think just at this point the decision was not to do that, again, to try and keep this streamlined. You know, I went back at one stage as we were moving into it, the question became, what are we trying to fix? And again, number one, it came back to the quality of life issues. And the landscaping, you know, that's an issue of aesthetics. Aesthetics have value. But, you know, realistically, I'd say, it just doesn't rise as high as... Yes, Kathleen.
The other thing, and this doesn't probably have to be addressed right away, but it will come up, when the house goes to change buyers or sellers, owners, excuse me, I'm in real estate, and so people are looking for a vacation rental to buy. So you tell them this is a vacation. It's currently a vacation rental, but they can't be granted a license until they buy it. Then they don't know if they can get the license, so they don't know whether to go yes or no.
How do we address that?
Well, none of them are
transferable. In the transfer of ownership.
No.
No, they're going to have to come in and apply in the same way and get it. We can't guarantee anything.
I know, but it becomes an issue because it's like, which first, the chicken or the egg. They want to buy it, but they don't want to buy it if they can't use it for a rental because it won't achieve their purpose. And it's come up before with things, and people are saying, well, gosh, it's not fair. Well, I realize there's no simple answer. No. But resale value is...
I mean, in that essence, every time a person buys a business inside of, like, say, your Newport that has a business licensing program, I can't guarantee you're going to get your business license from the city of Newport.
So, but, I mean,
you can apply, and if you meet the requirements, you're going
to
get it.
But are there any grounds to deny a first-time applicant?
No.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it would be a fairly...
You can look at the requirements.
Yeah, so as long as those...
As long as the property...
Yeah, so hopefully that's not going to be a problem.
No, it should not.
Yeah, yeah.
This is important enough. I'm just going to drill down just a little bit more.
Sure.
As politely as I can.
Sure.
I went on several tours with Timothy, our building. And... we were just granting licenses, and most of the older houses are really old, and they're not up to code, and these licenses are being granted, and people are, and particularly these ocean, some of the Ocean View, you know, you've got this infinite demand, so you got, that's why I asked what a sleeping area is. They're cramming maybe 12 people in a house that was meant to sleep two, and then you get upstairs, and they're even renting in the attic, and then there's no egress, if there is a fire, there'd just be trapped up there. And, you know, maybe that's not likely, but I think eventually over time, failure to do that would result in somebody being burned alive. That's why I came back at you. Just because they wouldn't, a lot of these houses around here haven't met code because, hell, 50% of them are back from the 50s and 40s. They're still running.
But, you know, if you think about it, too, in terms of running the long-term renters, you know, with the Landlord Tenant Act, basically you have to have sewer and water. Those things, they don't really deal with it. And other than having, it's going to have to be, you know, code, obviously, they have
to. At least this would be a chance for us to deal with it, even though other places aren't. If we did and we saved somebody, that seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
I see your point.
Okay.
We'll take another look.
I'm quiet.
Okay, no, I appreciate it. Anybody
well,
else?
Right.
Yeah, I really appreciate the dialogue. Yes, go ahead, please.
I have one more question.
Sure.
Andrews, and I think I agree with Mr. Ward, is it? That it seems like with the bedroom situation, and I'm not clear if I understand how that's defined in the statute, but a lot of vacation rentals obviously have a sofa that serves or a pull-out bed or that kind of thing. So it's not clear whether bedrooms include sort of auxiliary sleeping areas. Just as in a hotel, you could have a suite, you know, a bed and a pull-out couch or something. But it seems to make sense to go by something like the building code or just general occupancy limits that would otherwise apply. And I say that because, again, I have this weird, giant, rambling house. I only allow 12 people in it. But it's so open, you know. Then is it the same standard if your bedrooms are 600-square-foot bedrooms as opposed to 100-square-foot bedrooms, you know? Or is it okay to have a pull-out couch in a 1,000-square-foot great room? I would think that would be okay, but just as written, I would think it would be more important to tie it to the safety of renters, because that's how we personally set our occupancy limit. And so that would be my comment.
Give that some thought. Okay.
Appreciate that.
Hey, yeah, I really want to emphasize, I appreciate everybody being here, great dialogue, some different perspectives from managers, owners, neighbors, and yet I think we're hearing more agreement than disagreement and really shared outcomes, but thank you, but I hope to get to a common goal.